Translation again. Nanda Maharaj and the others said, "We must previously have performed austerities for a very long time, worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, performed pious activities for public life, constructing public roads and wells, and also given charity, as a result of which this boy, although faced with death, has returned to give happiness to his relatives." Om Agyanata Maranta Shaktanandana Salakaya Chakshura Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So we are continuing the pastime of Krishna and his killing of the demon, Chinabrata. Anyone here got children? Put up your hand if you have children. Stick your hands up, come on. Have any of you ever mislaid your children? Did you get them back again? Yeah. Do anybody know? Of course, we do read in the newspapers of people who mislay their children and they don't come back. There's something in the paper right now. Some little boy disappeared in Spain 15 or so years ago. And it's just coming to light. What happened to him? But that 15 years has been hell for the parents. Total hell. What happened to him? We want closure. Even when someone's passed away, we want closure. We want it to, okay, now I know what happened. But that uncertainty is hellish. So this desire to for the welfare of one's children and the welfare of one's offspring, it's our very nature. Those that which is dear to us and those who are dear to us, we want their welfare. So here we have a situation where we're seeing the great relief of Nanda Maharaj. Just incredible relief. And it's a relief we can't conceive of. And when you've mislaid your children, forgive the terminology, but when the children have gone missing in your own experience, what was your feeling when they came back? Great relief. Did you shower them with kisses? Buy them a little toy or something. Of course, if he's been naughty or the child's been naughty and run off, they get a stiff telling off sometimes. You shouldn't play on the road. You shouldn't do this, shouldn't do that. But it's natural that one feels such great relief. Now, another question. When your child returned, how many of you thought it was the result of your pious activities that they came back? Anybody? No. Just relief. But sometimes you say, "Thank God you're safe." You do give credit. Even the atheists say, "Thank God you're back." Even they say that. And there's a little, not exactly an expletive, but there's something that people say a lot these days. It's just too common. They say, "Oh my God." You see people saying that? It's horrible, actually. Because the person, you kind of sense there's no piety there. They're not saying, "Oh my God." It's almost a swear word. So people are calling upon or recognizing some higher power to some degree or another. And here Nanda Maharaj it's a strange mixture because doesn't actually thank God. He's saying it's something we've done in the past to deserve that this child has come, even though he's Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokul. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Padaya Shrimad Bhagavatam Swamgane Namaste Saraswati Dev Gauravani Pachari Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokul. This is an insight into the mindset of the pure devotee insofar as he's completely dependent upon the well wishes of the Lord, yet ignorant or unaware of the fact that the Supreme Lord is right there in front of him. This is the work of Yoga Maya. How is it possible? He's saying we must have worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the past. Yes, it's true. And yet, he's playing there. And there's another pastime going to emerge in a few pages, a few more verses, where Mother Yashoda sees Krishna yawns. Little children yawn. It's very charming when you see the child yawn, this innocent little yawn. And Mother Yashoda happens to glance in the mouth of Krishna. What's in his mouth? The whole universal manifestation is within the mouth of Krishna. And she doesn't want to see it. No. The pure devotees, they're not interested in mystic displays. They don't want to even... They recognize Krishna as the Supreme, but they actually don't want to go into that mood of reverence and awe. They don't want that. Because their love is so intense. Now, it's interesting here, Nanda Maharaj, he doesn't consider himself or his community independent of the laws of nature. He's actually crediting the return of his child, Krishna, to the family circle, and saying, "We must have been something we did in the past." And he gives a whole list of things. He doesn't consider himself independent of material nature. Although the pure devotees aren't under the control of material nature. But he considers, it must be because of this, or this, and this, and this. So we'll just go through some of the points that he's made, some of what he's crediting it to. So he says, we must previously have performed austerities for a very long time. So we understand there are different kinds of austerities. And the different types of austerity, they're very much governed by our motivation. And those who are in the mode of ignorance, they perform austerities which torture the body. They do very stringent things to the body, often very painful, even harmful. This is austerity in the mode of ignorance. And generally it's done for some mischievous intention. We got the extreme example of that fellow called Vritasura, and he was a devotee of Lord Shiva, and he was lit a sacrificial fire, and he was slicing off bits of his flesh. I mean, this is austerity in the mode of ignorance. I don't know how far he got, but he left enough for him. Right at the end, he said, "Well, I'm going to offer my head. Lord Shiva's not appeared. Let me offer my head." Pretty stupid thing to do, but he did. He offered his head. And Lord Shiva appeared. And what was his intention? He said, what is it that you want? He said, "Well, I want that whoever's head I touch, his head will come off, fall off. Head will explode, crack." So Lord Shiva said, "Well, yeah, you can have it. Yeah, there you are." He said, "But you didn't need to go to so much trouble. You could have just offered me Ganges water. That would have been sufficient. But often the demons are very full of false prestige. I can do a sacrifice like no one else has done. Huh? No one else has done a sacrifice like this. I'm going to really, you know, get Lord Shiva's blessings here. You know, I'm going to offer him my head." So he never actually got to cut off his head, but he got the benediction. And then he's looking at Lord Shiva, who, as we get understand from the pastime. And it appears that Uma, Lord Shiva's consort, was there with him. He said, So he starts to, "Let me test it out." And so he starts to reach out to touch Lord Shiva's head because he wants to enjoy Uma, Lord Shiva's consort. He wants to enjoy the material energy. So Lord Shiva's got no, you know, he knows he's got his blessings of potency. So Lord Shiva starts running. Who can chase Lord Shiva? He's been trapped by his own benediction, in a sense. He's caught in a double bind. He's given the blessing, now it's coming back on him. So he's running all over the universe. And so, to cut a long story short, he's praying to Lord Vishnu, "Please help me from this situation." And Lord Vishnu, "Yes, don't worry." So he comes as a little Brahmin boy, if I get the story correct. He says, "Well, where are you going?" Very charming little boy. A bit like Lord Vamanade. "Where are you going? You look a very powerful demon to me. What's going on here?" "Ah, I've got a benediction." "What's the benediction then?" "Well, whoever's head I touch, his head explodes." "And who gave you the benediction?" "Ah, Lord Shiva." "Oh, you don't want to listen to Lord Shiva? He's always giving these false benedictions. It wouldn't even work." "What? No. Just touch your head and see, it won't work." End of story. That's austerity in the mode of ignorance. Severe austerity. Because no one can compare with the austerities of Hiranyakashipu. And his austerity was very, you know, on his tiptoes for a, was that 1,000 celestial years? Is that right? 1,000 years. Celestial years. So, yeah. So that's millions of our years. On his tiptoes. Anyone tried to reach the top shelf recently? You know? On your tiptoes. You can't do it for long. 5 minutes, 10 minutes a day. No. So much so that all his flesh had gone, and the ants had eaten all the flesh from his bones. He was keeping his life air circulating in his bones and creating such a disturbance that Lord Brahma came to see what was going on. Or then another austerity, Dhruva Maharaj. He was performing austerity in order to get his kingdom, to get a kingdom. His mothers told him that, well, the sages, they find Vishnu in the forest. So Narada met Dhruva in the forest and gave him the mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So Dhruva was sitting down, so he was chanting constantly, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. But he consistently reduced his eating and his breathing, bit by bit, week by week, or month by month, until, you know, he was eating one leaf every month and one breath every goodness knows how. So finally, he was fixed in meditation, and his meditation was actually disturbing the whole universal balance. The part can affect the whole, so much so that the Dhruva was affecting the whole, disturbing the whole universal balance, and Lord. The Lord suddenly disappeared. He was meditating on the Lord in the heart, and then suddenly he disappeared, and he's there in front of him. So that's, of course, austerity in the mode of goodness. Actually, it was transcendental. He wanted to see Lord Vishnu for material means. So it's not actually the mode of goodness, no. Although he's approaching Lord Vishnu, it's in the mode of passion. It's motivated. But having seen Lord Vishnu, he was so enamored by the sight of the Lord and the presence of the Lord, he didn't want his benedictions. He didn't want the world. He didn't want a kingdom. And austerity is in the mode of passion. Well, everyone's doing austerity in the mode of passion. The daily drive to work, the endeavor in the workplace, this passionate desire to acquire wealth for the maintenance of family and friends, etc. So there's different kinds of austerities, and of course the results are very different. And Ananda Maharaj says, performed austerities for a very long time. For a very long time. So we think, what do we think when we think of doing austerities for a very long time? 2 hours chanting japa, that's a long time to chant japa. Or do some austerity for a week. Or chatamas, we have 4 months. Each month, if we're following chatamas, we have the austerity, no green leafy vegetables for a whole month. Another month, no yogurt for a month, no milk for a month. And what's the fourth one? No, urd dal. So you can have chana dal, but no urd dal. So it's not, it's an austerity, it's an inconvenience. An inconvenience, but it's not so austere. But when you're confronted with a lovely steaming cup of thick creamy milk from the cows here at the manor, and you're sitting down to evening prasadam, you think, oh, it's austere. But not in the sense that it's not impossible. The Christians, they have their Lent, a period of Lent where they make some vow. How long is Lent? Is it a month? 40 days. That's following the footsteps of Lord Jesus, isn't it? His 40 days fasting. So you give up something for 40 days. Some Christians give up meat for 40 days. Some give up chocolate for 40 days. This and that. And the Muslims, they also have their austerities. They do Ramadan. they don't eat between the rising of the sun or the setting of the sun, which in the hot climates where many people live in that culture, that's not so easy all day. But presumably they have a big feast in the morning, or they certainly have a feast at night. But again, it's generally a very sattvic feast. Anyone here from a Muslim background? What do you generally feast on in the evening in Ramadan? Do what? Big meal. I heard they have dates and pomegranates in the evening, and fruits and nice sattvic things. So that's not austerity. Fasting all day for how long is it? 1 month? 1 month. So every culture has some kind of austerity. The North American Indians, when I was younger, I used to be very fascinated in the culture of North American Indians. Beyond the cowboy films, you have to do a bit of research, you know. And there's one, at this particular time of the year, they have this thing called the sun dance. And they stick this pole up in the camp, encampment. And they attach these thongs, these long leather thongs, to the pole. And at the end of the pole, there's this wooden sliver. And there's two or three or four of these. And they pull out the flesh on the chest, and they stick this wooden spike through the slit into the flesh. So you've got three or four or five of these at the top of the pole, and then they lean back. They lean back. And they also sometimes they put buffalo skulls, hang them from their body. So they've just not got their own weight, they've got the weight of all these buffalo skulls, and they spend the entire day leaning back and moving. As the sun moves around the sky, they move around as well, staring at the sun. So this is worship of the sun, but it's a mode of ignorance. It is sun worship, and they do get visions, they do get the mystic, they were looking for that connection with the higher realms. So they do this. So there's different types of austerities. And people these days do austerity, especially the ladies. There's these horrible austerities to enhance their beauty. And the men also. You know? They get this injections of, what is it, silicon? You know? Botox. You know, you can have it on different parts of the body, you know, this Botox. You know? And sometimes it goes wrong. You know? And you see these pictures of before and after. Some beautiful film star. She's very attractive, you know? And then she's starting to get a bit long in the tooth. Well, not even long in the tooth, just a few wrinkles here and there, you know. Oh, I don't want the wrinkles, you know. So she has all this, you know, stuff going on. And some of them end up with lips, you know. So the austerities, sometimes they go wrong, you know. It's all about motivation. So that's austerity for physical bodily beauty. Everyone's doing austerity. You cannot get by in this life without some kind of austerity, some inconvenience for some goal. Now, whether the goal is to elevate oneself or to elevate others or simply to feather one's nest and advance oneself in some way or another, but austerity is always there. And Ananda Maharaj says, perform pious activities for public life, constructing public roads and wells. Performing pious activities for public life. So that's looking after the civic welfare. It's not just pious activities for me, it's actually doing pious activities for the welfare of society. We see that a bit these days, but not so much. In this country, it was much more common in Victorian times. Victorians, they had a strong sense of civic duty. And the government didn't have so many welfare programs like we have today. But the individual would take responsibility. Someone would start an orphanage. Or someone would start something for the welfare of others who were less fortunate. The Victorians planted lots of trees. We have we say the leafy suburbs of the bigger cities. And sometimes you go to some places, some of the cities there, maybe the city's run down, but in suburbia, you get nice houses, often all turned into flats these days, and sometimes really gone downhill, but the big trees are still there. The roads are lined with trees. Now, in this country, so, of course, you don't need shade, not generally speaking. You want as much sun as you can get, but still, it's nice, protected. It looks beautiful, and it does give shade when the sun gets too hot, which isn't very often. But, of course, in places like India, planting trees along the sides of roads gives shade to the travellers, especially at a time when they weren't just ripping backwards and forwards in a motor car. They were walking, or they were coming with a cart. So then it's travel is very it needs a lot of exertion. It's very tiresome, it's tedious, you get to work up quite a sweat. And then not only are the shade, got trees for shade, but also digging wells. And you don't see them in action these days. Sometimes it's planted with flowers. But I remember when I was a kid, you'd see the horse troughs. Big granite, great big trough of carved out of stone where the horses could drink. So, and not just the horse would drink, but there'd also be a cup on a chain, and you could, the passerby could get a drink of water. Presumably not from the horse trough, but there'd be a separate little. So the passersby could refresh themselves and the horses could drink. Of course, those days you needed, the horses had to drink because everything was horse-drawn. And of course, digging wells. If there's a well, then there's water for a whole community. So these different ways. I remember hearing many years ago when devotees were first starting to go to Eastern Europe. How many are from Eastern Europe or Russia? Previous Iron Curtain countries. Anyone? Come on, some of you guys are from there. Come on. Austerity, put your hand up. So I heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, I heard that in some of those countries in the past, before communism, the kings used to plant fruit trees on the sides of the roads. Did any of you have experience of that? No? Or it must have been in some of the other countries. So once upon a time, Europe was full of little kingdoms. Little kingdoms before the devastation of all the wars which have flattened everything. But there used to be little kingdoms, and the kings, some of them were pious, and on the side of the roads they'd plant fruit trees. Why? So the citizens would not go hungry. There's always fruit to eat. There's always something to eat. People could even pick the apples and sell them in the market for people who couldn't be bothered to go down the road. So that the piety, those who seek the welfare of others, they do consider others, that's pious. And we don't see that these days. All the planting schemes of local councils and designers, the architects, it might look good. Most of the time, it doesn't even smell nice. As long as they plant trees which are they're roses and plant things which smell nice. When you go down the street and you smell the flowers, smell the flowers on the trees, it's very nice. It lifts the atmosphere, very much so. There's even a ginkgo tree in one part of Watford. Ginkgos don't smell, and they don't look much good, but they're very good for your brain. I'm not going to tell you where it is, otherwise there'll be no leaves left on it. But that's unusual, actually, to see that kind of tree. And also around, when you walk around many parts, sometimes you see a fruit tree in a very strange place. What's that true fruit tree? Because once upon a time, that was someone's back garden. And people would plant trees for fruit. People would be self-sufficient. They'd grow their own vegetables, they have their own fruit. They'd forage in the hedgerows. People would walk down the country lanes picking this and that. In America now, in some places, it's illegal to pick anything wild. You get arrested. And maybe it'll come to that here, who knows. But nature's bounty is there, and the pious person wants to create facility for the welfare of others. But generally, it's material facility. We'll come to transcendental facility in a minute. And also giving in charity. Also giving in charity. I made loads and loads of notes. It took me forever to wade through them. But let's see. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says... Here's a text from Chaitanya Charitamrita. The that the translation is, by good fortune, one becomes eligible to cross the ocean of nescience. And when one's term of material existence decreases, one may get an opportunity to associate with pure devotees. By such association, one's attraction to Krishna is awakened. And what does Prabhupada say? Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura explains this point. Prabhupada says, this is a very, very good point. It's about pious activities. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura explains this point. Is this bhagya, fortune, the result of an accident or something else? This is a discussion sometimes we have amongst devotees. Is our meeting Srila Prabhupada's mercy? Is it our fortune or is it simply mercy? You know, this debate goes on. Prabhupada says, is this bhagya, fortune, the result of an accident or something else? In the scriptures, devotional service and pious activity are considered fortunate. Pious activity can be divided into three categories. Pious activities that awaken one's dormant Krishna consciousness are called bhakti unmukhi sukriti. Pious activities that awaken one's dormant Krishna consciousness, bhakti unmukhi sukriti. Pious activities that bestow material opulence are called bogun mukhi sukriti. And pious activities that enable the living entity to merge into the existence of the Supreme are called mokshan mukhi sukriti. These last two awards of pious activity are not actually fortunate. Pious activities are fortunate when they help one become Krishna conscious. The good fortune of bhakti mukhi is attainable only when one comes in contact with a devotee. By associating with a devotee willingly or unwillingly, one advances in devotional service, and thus one's dormant Krishna consciousness is awakened. Willingly or unwillingly, knowingly or unknowingly, that's the potency of the pure devotee. So we're daily associating with Srila Prabhupada through his purports in the Srimad Bhagavatam. We daily associate with Prabhupada when we offer Guru Pooja to him, when we carry out his instructions, when we distribute his books, when we take the holy name on the street, when we associate with devotees in a Krishna conscious way. This is all, directly and indirectly, this is associating with Prabhupada, with the pure devotee. And each other. We enliven each other as well. We may not be pure devotees, but the association of each other, when we're in a Krishna-conscious state of mind, because we can also do nonsense, but when we're in a Krishna-conscious state of mind, especially Kishore here does a nice reading group at his house every Wednesday. And that same reading group is also up here in the, is it Jamuna room, is it? Oh, you're also there. Every Tuesday. Gathering around to associate with Srila Prabhupada through his books. He's there. I live forever in my books. Prabhupada's right here. I said, how is he here? How? He's pleased when we take up the path of Krishna consciousness. He's sharing his insights into the Shastric verses through his purports. We can associate with him by reading his words. Prabhupada said in terms of book distribution, anyone reads one word, his life is changed. How is it? How is a word going to change you? It's not the word. It's not the word that changes you. It's where the word is. It's the current that's flowing through that word. That transcendental current, as who was it pointed out yesterday in one of the Maharajas? Who was it? The saffron dust particles are present in the sound vibration of the pure devotee's words. Raghunath. Yeah. Saffron dust, it sounds very poetic, but it's more than poetry. It's the intention of the pure devotee. His intention is in the sound vibration. As they are intention. Everything's, you can see, it's eight on his, you can read a person's intention by their eyes, by their expression. Sometimes, Sometimes people are they can cover it over. But generally speaking, the voice gives it away. The face may fool you, but the voice, there's something a bit twisty there. Or there's something very honest there. There's something very humble there. There's some nice intention, or whatever. So, and Raghunath pointed out very nicely, he said, and Prabhupada, not only did he not write these books, Krishna wrote these books. Prabhupada said that many times. He's actually passing on what Krishna's dictating to him. But he doesn't write it down. It comes out in sound vibration. Prabhupada's books were dictated, which is kind of unusual. Sometimes big leaders, they have they dictate a letter for the secretary because there's no comparison. But dictation isn't so common. It's usually, books are usually written one way or another. But Prabhupada's books are all dictated. And that's also the nature of the Vedic literature. It is transcendental sound. Transcendental sound. It's all sound vibration. So those activities which bring one to Krishna consciousness, bhaktyunmukhi sukriti, those are the pious activities. That's the history of Nanda Maharaj and all his associates. Prabhupada says, couple of minutes left. See if I can find it. Prabhupada is saying, how is it that these cowherd boys are playing with Krishna? How is it that the gopis have association of Krishna? How is it Nanda Maharaj has constant association with Krishna as his father? Let me find it. Prabhupada said he's done heaps of pious activities. Heaps of pious activities. Where is it? Yeah. So, Prajumna asks a question. This is 1968. New York, 1968. Prajumna asks a question. Is there a difference in the quality of service between a person who is just accepts outright service to Krishna and one who wants to scrutinize and inquire more and more about it? Is there a difference between someone who just accepts Krishna and one who wants to know more and more? Prabhupada says, one who loves Krishna without inquiry, that is nice position. In other words, Nanda Maharaj isn't kind of scrutinizing Krishna. Well, who exactly is this? No, he's not. None of his Krishna's associates are analyzing Krishna. They just love him. And it's not sentimental love. It isn't to be confused with some emotional outpouring. It's the pure love of pure conscience, pure transcendence. That's the very nature of the soul. It's pure love for Krishna. So Prabhupada says, that is a nice position. To inquire about Krishna is knowledge, and pure devotion is transcendental to knowledge. Transcendental to knowledge. So when you're in Vaikuntha, you know here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And you're filled with awe and reverence because he's God. So they're full of knowledge. But because of the knowledge is there, it prevents that flow of unconditional love. They have love, but it's conditioned by awe and reverence. So I'll skip. I'll just go on a little bit. Prabhupada says, he's speaking, Prabhupada, that is explained. This is the highest stage, the stage of the gopis or the cowherd boys playing with Krishna. Oh, they are Krita Punya Punja. Many, many lives they have undergone, many types of sacrifices, austerities, penances, and then they have come to this stage. Now this is a key to the verse that we've just read. Prabhupada says, they have, for many, many lives, they have undergone penances, sacrifices, austerities, and then they have come to this stage. And what's the stage? The stage is that they have pure, unconditional association with Krishna, so much so that they're bewildered by yoga maya, and in the course of Krishna's pastimes, they think that Krishna's return is due to their sacrifices, austerities, and penances. That's what's brought them to that level of associating purely with Krishna. Prabhupada says, when Krishna is playing with his cowherd boys, these cowherd boys, who are they? They are living entities who have amassed volumes and volumes of pious activities. Krita punya punja. After many, many lives, just like a bank balance increases, similarly, one who has increased the balance of pious activities for many, many thousands of lives, oh, such persons are now playing with Krishna. They have taken the body of his cowherd boys, transcendental spiritual body, and just they are playing with Krishna. And who is Krishna? Itang satang brahma sakanubhutya. Sakanubhutya. The great saints and sages who are trying to understand the Supreme Brahman, here is Krishna. That Supreme Brahman is here, and he's playing. So we run out of time. When you do a bit of research for a class, you just come up with reams and reams and reams of amazing. You want to share it, and there's not time. Because if I'd actually assimilated it, it's sharing it from here. But I have no memory. I have to refer to my notes. So I hope you'll forgive my shortcomings. But that's just a little glimpse into Nanda Maharaj's wonderful pastimes with the Supreme Lord. So we'll continue tomorrow and see what happens next.